Hello and welcome to the Tortoise Shack special tonight. And tonight we're going to be talking about CETA. We have a great panel of guests. We'll introduce each one as they come along. Just want to remind everybody that the Tortoise Shack exists on patrons alone. So hand in pocket and join the Tortoise Shack as a patron, patreon.com/Tortoise Shack. Now that's enough from me. And I'm going to hand us over to Tony. He's going to be master of ceremonies and start us off.
Listen, this was actually these conversations, we've been having them for a number of years now. We've been looking at the various deals that have been kicked about and delayed. And obviously, pre-Christmas, there was a huge incentive to postpone initially the CETA vote. Now we see it's back on the agenda. And unfortunately, the agenda has moved from people who were unfavorable, let's just say, this time last year are now saying, well, there's been some amendments and some tweaks and I'm sort of satisfied and sure, but they'll do it anyway. And we decided that we wouldn't take that either. So we'd push back again. And I was reaching for an analogy. And again, I know Alice Mary Higgins is here. So I was thinking about some of the conversations we'd had. And one of the things that struck me was Ireland always seems to be late to the party. And this reminds me that we're late to the party again. And the people who actually arrived at the party have spent years trying to get out. They're all dying of hangovers and we want to go in. And it's still in my head in that we want to still go into this room when no one else wants to. Everybody else is saying, no, please, we're trying to get out there. I mean, the idea that even in the Brexit negotiations, they've decided not to include some of these aspects that we're now walking into just seems absolutely insane to me. So look, we put this on. I know Martin was saying about the Tortoise Shack, but it was really just we have the platform, so we said we'd use it. So we're delighted to see so many people here. One of the things I wanted to get it in early, and we were talking to, I was talking to Laura Laura Cahill earlier, who's here from Colove, and she said to me that, you know, well, I have this fact sheet, and I said, yeah, but a lot of people only listen at the beginning. So Laura, can you please explain people what we have in terms of the talking points and some of the things that you guys have prepared in terms of giving people the bullet points, enough information to be able to understand what's going on, please.
Great, thanks, Tony. So Colove Trade Justice Group have been working on CETA for a long time. Back in 2016, we were very active and we've just had to very quickly kind of come back on board. And we initially sent out an email, I'm sure like most people did, to all of the TDs saying, stop this vote, you know, when it came in before Christmas. It's too quick. We haven't had time to catch up. We don't really know what's happening, what the updates are, even ourselves, to have kind of that informed debate about CETA, let alone to be voting on it. So we pushed for that. And so what we did then was we listened to all what they came back with. And there was a lot of kind of, let's say, misunderstandings, to put nicely. And so we just collected all of those misunderstandings and we worked with the original kind of TTIP network and we got a lot of the very kind of au fait specialists to kind of say, okay, what is the story with CETA? What is going on? So we've put it all together in a fact sheet and I'll share it below as well. But I suppose some of the misconceptions that were had was there's a lot around this idea that ICS and the investor court system is completely different to the ISDS, the investor state dispute settlement, that's very discredited and so terrible. But this new ICS it's so different. It's completely much more transparent. It's great. And the reality is obviously, which we know, and I'm sure people will talk about, well, it isn't. It's just been some tinkering around the edges, as it's been put, to make it look nicer. And it's got some functional differences, but some procedural differences, but its function is exactly the same. So that there's no changes there in that regard. And just some ideas around the fact that we, you know, we'll be free to regulate and we will never get sued, or we can continue to regulate for our environmental standards and the Paris agreements included. And so it's fine. But in reality, these are not it's not true. We can still be sued if we change our regulations, and the Paris Agreement is in there, but there's no teeth, there's no way to regulate, there's no way to enforce it. So there was just, I suppose what we wanted to do was to kind of go back to the TDs and say, what you're saying is incorrect, firstly, and also maybe to put people in a position that they can also start having those conversations with their TDs as well. So I suppose the idea when we share the fact sheet is that people can feel a little bit more confident to have those conversations with their TDs, and that when they're getting emails that kind of give them a barrage of information about this, that and the other, that they can go to the sheet, pick out the misunderstanding and have something to respond to. So so that's really it. And I know also, Kolov, we have a letter for civil society as well for organizations, and that'll go out on Monday. So if people want to sign up to that as well, that's also there. So they're kind of the two kind of key things really that we're doing.
One of the things that strikes me on this is that if you recall the first time, but the most recent time we had a crack at this in December, obviously the pressure comes hugely on the Green Party because it's been looked upon through that lens. But also at the time, Fianna Fáil weren't quite sure. There was a lot of, and they were waiting on their talking points, the talking points that you now have the answers to, because they came back with, you know, they waited 2 or 3 days and then they got like, here's these three paragraphs that explain feel felt found. I felt the same, but now I feel different, you know.
And it was, yeah, a lot of that.
Yeah, and yeah. It was really bad salesmanship, and you know, yeah, but it takes the language to be able to see that and push back. Can I ask, in terms of the in doing that though, are we can people broaden it out? Like, I mean, I know we're probably predominantly here, there's probably people, Green members, I know there are, and we're all looking at that, but this is an issue for the other members of the coalition as well. Are we able to just people asking for the spelling of Kolov, and I've gotten distracted, but in terms of the where they'll be able to go, will all of that will answer the questions that the parties that are pro it as well, not just the parties that are doing it because they're supposed to do it?
No, it's in response to all of the TDs that got back to us across all political parties. So it responds to the Greens, but it also responds to some of the narratives around, oh, but we need to have it for investment. There's no, you know, we need to be part of this. It's part, we're a small island nation. We need to be trading. It's essential that we are part of this trade deal. But I suppose just to be clear that this vote isn't on the trade deal. The trade deal's already provisionally ratified. It's in, whether you like it or not, it's here. What this vote is about is specifically the investor protection, this contentious part of the deal, which would allow foreign companies to sue the government for their perceived loss or their loss of profits where it's seen to be discriminatory or unfair. So, this is what we're voting on. So we don't need to have this. It's not essential. Lots of trade deals in 2020, including, as you mentioned, the EU and the in Britain's trade deal doesn't have it. Other people are other trade deals are taking it out. Like we've, yeah, it's yeah,
let's not be, again, back to the analogy, why are we trying to get into the party when everybody wants to leave?
Exactly.
It's crazy. I'm gonna move us on. Dave Gibney, can I get you to unmute there, Dave? You have experience of these trade deals in Dave Gibney represents Mandate Trade Union. He's also been involved in Right to Water and several campaigns, but he has specific work experience in these trade deals in Australia and seeing the chill factor that they do. Dave, do you want to just give us a bit of some reasons why it's not just, how do I put this, an environmental concern? It's much broader than that.
Yeah, so I, for my sins, I worked for the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union in Australia for 3 years, just over a decade ago I started there. But when I was there, one of the things that came to light was Philip Morris, which is a major tobacco company. And like Ireland, Philip Morris was, or Australia was implementing plain packaging cigarettes. And Philip Morris took exception to that and decided to not only sue the Australian government, but what they did was really sneaky. They couldn't find anywhere to sue in the national courts. So what they did was They used an ISDS court agreement that had been made in 1993, decades earlier, between Hong Kong and Australia. And they moved their offices from, I think it was Brisbane, was somewhere in Australia, and moved it over to Hong Kong so that they could avail of the ISDS process and sue the Australian government. Now, they failed, but it took years. I think it took over a decade nearly of a court case and cost the Australian government, obviously, a fortune. And where I would come to this debate, and you mentioned that I work for a trade union in Ireland, you know, we all know the benefits of the smoking ban that were brought in around the you know, 20 years ago now. And our members were bar workers who were dying of lung cancer. And it was a workplace issue. They were dying because they were going to work and having to inhale other people's smoke. Would Micheál Martin, our now Taoiseach, would he have implemented that piece of legislation that has saved up to 5,000 lives of bar workers? Would he have done that if he knew that there could be a chill factor coming back at him because the Irish government could be sued for taking these type of actions? And we also know, by the way, that Philip Morris has experience in this in Ireland, because in 2015 they attempted to sue the Irish government for plain packaging cigarettes. So I don't know why we would be attempting to open up these chill-like effects. And again, you know, another major case that was taken in ISDS is against the Egyptian government by Veolia, another company that's operating in Ireland right now, sued the Egyptian government for attempting to increase the minimum wage. And it, what it did was it made the Egyptian government procrastinate and worry about whether they could increase the minimum wage. So all those workers had to wait until the end of that process. Now, they lost the case, Veolia did. But that doesn't make it, you know, any better. And one example I was telling you earlier on, Tony, was 2 years ago this month, we won legislation, very important legislation, to ban zero-hour contracts in Ireland and to provide workers, all workers, with the ability to seek regularised hours, right? It was on the back of a Dun Stores campaign where a lot of workers were having their hours changed from week to week. And it was also on the back of, if you remember, Lloyd's Pharmacy strike, where they went out on strike for 11 or 12 days. Now, Lloyd's Pharmacy is owned by McKesson Corporation. It's the fourth largest corporation on the planet. Right? It has three times the revenue of the Irish state in terms of all the taxation that we take in. If you tell me that we bring in an ICS or ISDS system, that McKesson's not going to consider suing the Irish government for that piece of legislation that improved those Lloyd's Pharmacy workers' lives, then, you know, you'd have to be a bit naive to think that they're not going to attempt to do that because it interferes with their profits. So they're just a couple of the real examples of the chill effect and what could happen. You know, again, on the workers' rights stuff, Ireland's one of the only countries, I think it is the only country in the EU, with no collective bargaining rights. We have among the worst employment legislative protections in Europe. And what this system, to me, seems to be doing is, yeah, on the government, there's a government document that's been circulated in recent weeks which says this is not going to force a race to the bottom. And it might not. But what it is doing is drawing a line in the sand and going and saying, this is how far you've come. You shall go no further in terms of improving workers' terms and conditions of employment through legislative processes. So that's my big concern. And in CETA itself, by the way, it does have protections, or says it has protections through, you know, the ILO conventions, but there's absolutely no mechanism for enforcing your rights around that stuff. So this is not a document that workers across Europe or across Canada are looking forward to bringing in. And I'll say that it's very unusual. I know Alice Mary Higgins is on your podcast. I listened to her the other day saying, you know, often in Ireland, trade unions disagree on things. We're all united on this. This is a bad deal. Trade unions across Canada are saying the same thing. Trade unions across Europe are saying the same thing. So why is it that the small cohort of people in the Irish government is saying, this is a great deal, let's bring this
that,
in.
That is the million, with the billion euro question at this stage. Why is it, Dave? I do need to move on. And I know that we will probably come back, because there's going to be lots of questions and people have lots of things to comment on. But Natasha Arif of Extinction Rebellion, first of all, thanks so much for coming on. And do you want to just give me a sense of, in terms of the activism and the opposition to CETA, and where you guys stand? Because Extinction Rebellion has had, you know, several campaigns, but now under COVID, under a pandemic, things are much more difficult.
It's true, things have been difficult, but this has really energized so many people. So what happened was a group of us formed this digital rebellion, and the idea was to have a Twitter storm around the time that the Doyle debate, or the vote actually, no debate or little debate on CETA was going to happen. But unfortunately, you know, the Doyle schedule is made on a weekly basis. So we haven't been able to ascertain when this vote might take place. So we sent out a newsletter explaining all the, giving all the information about CETA and why we think it was a bad deal and everything. And in it, there was a WhatsApp link, and that created this Digital Rebellion WhatsApp link. Now, there was an awful lot of traffic, and we realized that people wanted to do more than just have a Twitter storm. So that became a broadcasting WhatsApp, which means we were only updating people about the potential Twitter storm and other actions. And then we created another WhatsApp group, which was called the Stop CETA Action Group. Now, this is a very energetic group, and XR is a non-hierarchical system. So people just run with anything that comes into their mind, and it's very creative. We can put up the link for the Digital Rebellion WhatsApp group and the Stop CETA Action Group. I mean, I'll just share with you some of the actions. So one of them was to kind of ask our county councillors to put forward a motion. And the motion is, it's very specific. Some of it is to ask the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment to basically to basically get an Oireachtas scrutiny of the CETA document before any Doyle vote on ratification, and that this vote should be a vote of conscience. So I can send you the wording, but Wexford County Council have their meeting on Monday, and there's an emergency motion put forward. Cork City Council, South Dublin County Council and Monaghan County Council are also going to do a very similar. So a councillor in each of these councils have agreed to put forward this motion. Now, unfortunately, a lot of them are too late to put it on the agenda, so it has to be an emergency motion. But Bray Municipal District actually passed the motion recently, and if it doesn't go through the Wexford County Council one, the councillor said he would put it through the Wexford District one. That's just one example of the action that people are sharing. There's another one about, you know, you've got the unpost postcards, and people are saying, share your Valentine card, send them to your TDs, tell them that, you know, you don't agree with CETA, but, you know, put love all over it and whatever, bomb them with love, but also information. Somebody actually sewed a Stop CETA banner or a little piece, and she put that in with an envelope and sent it to her TD. We're sharing Instagram graphics. We're also sharing Twitter information. There's also another WhatsApp group. It's getting a bit complicated here, but it's a Twitter storm discussion. And really, that's more about sharing skills, explaining to people how to get onto Twitter, how to use the hashtags, how to use the handles, how to retweet. And we're also sharing graphics on that. So basically, I'll just repeat, there's three different ones. There's the Digital Rebellion, which is in broadcast mode. It's like everybody's on alert. When do we need to start this Twitter storm? Then there's the Stop CETA Action one. And then there's the Twitter storm discussion. But we've been sharing all kinds of information. We've shared the Just Transition Group webinar. We shared the Uplift campaign. We've been sharing the Tortoise Shack podcast. So, we've listened to Alice Mary Higgins a few times now.
So we put out a lot of content on, right, Tex?
Yeah. So we've had with the Slee Ella webinar that was really, really good. We've also been sharing the fact sheets that Laura's been talking about. In fact, I attached the fact sheet to the councillors so that they have all the information there.
What we might try to do after this is, you know, if I could collate as much as I can do, I can post it on all our feeds as well, because we've got plenty of different things going on across the Tortoise Shack, and yet everybody is kind of everybody's in on board with this. I gotta move us on. I'm gonna go to Jennifer Whitmore, the Sock Dems now, because what's interesting, Jennifer, is that you submitted a PQ on CETA, and you got a response, let's just say. Do you want to just explain the situation? Please give us a brief synopsis. Let's not go through every scred, please.
Okay, so before Christmas, actually, I asked the Taoiseach in the Dáil. I had a promised legislation question, so I asked him essentially, what's the rush with this? Why are we rushing it through? We have to wait for all these other member states to sign up. Why do we want to do it? In summary, I think his response to me was essentially, we're good boys in the class. You know, we want to be good trading partners. And that was the response. So then I followed up again early this year and said, okay, if you think it's such a good idea, you know, how about we have, you know, has there been any risk-based analysis done with regard to this? Have we looked at the social consequences of it for Ireland, the environmental consequences, the regulatory consequences? And as you said, like, I got the longest response I've ever seen come back from a PQ. It went on and on and on. And it spoke about the trade agreement, primarily saying the trade agreement's really good and the, you know, EU have worked out that it's going to add an extra 0.2% GDP to, you know, like it was really all about the trade agreement. And when it spoke in relation to the investor court aspect of it, because as we all know, the trade agreement is in, like it's operating. Any vote that they bring in is just in relation to the court aspect of it. He was just saying, well, we just want to rationalise the system for Canadian corporations, you know, at the moment that have 27 courts to go through. So we just want to have a very simple system for them, you know. But from my perspective, like when we're looking at it, is what's the benefit to Ireland? You know, I don't care what the benefit is to the corporations. Like, what's the benefit to Ireland and what's the benefit or the risk to Ireland if we do go ahead with this? Because the one thing that's really striking me is I cannot see why we would do it. And it's been mentioned a couple of times tonight. Why would we do this? What's the rush in doing it? Why don't we wait until the last member state has done it, you know, and use that time to have a discussion about it? Because we haven't had a public discussion, and it's brilliant. I just want to say congratulations for organising tonight, because it's really good to start seeing the momentum build. But the majority of people don't understand what's going on. And I know there are, you know, the fact sheet I saw earlier on, it's excellent. And I think it's not just for the public to have the information, the TDs need to have the information. Because this is really bringing me back to October when we had the discussion about the mother and baby homes. And during that debate, the government had this mantra that they just kept on repeating. And then they started saying that the opposition, who were, you know, we were obviously vocal in our concerns about it, we were wrong. You know, it was we were misinforming people. Like, and that was all absolutely false. It was a false narrative, to the point that after we had the debate and the vote went through, some of the government TDs were standing in the door saying, well, if I had known, I wouldn't have voted for this. Right. So we can't have that situation again. So it's not just, you know, the public getting involved and the public understanding the consequences. The TDs need to understand it. And when the TDs vote on it, they need to own that vote. So, you know, I don't want to see in 6 months' time when something happens, they say, well, actually, we didn't really understand it. We didn't know that was going to happen. You know, everyone needs to be informed. This is too important a thing not to do your homework on, because there's going to be no rowing back on this. And not only is there no rowing back, like there's a 20-year zombie clause. Like this is going to go on and on and on. So we need to make sure we have that discourse. And, you know, look, I'm on the Environment Oireachtas Committee with Lynn and Alice Mary. And, you know, I'd be more than happy for it to come through our Oireachtas Committee to have those discussions and have some sort of...
Well, you know they don't want that. You know they don't want that.
No, like, they don't.
It's been... That's what is really worrying is the level of... And we see it now again. We saw... You're so right to point out the fact that there's been... trying to change the narrative on this. You're misinformed, you don't get it. And they've stuck to that tact with a few things in the last few months, sadly. We saw it where they said, I mean, Simon Magar was telling us months ago they're going to delete the mother and baby home reports, and they said they wouldn't do it, and now we're told that they did do it, you know. And it's so all of these things that were, and I'm using the word editorialize in its broadest sense, but you know, there is a sense of controlling the narrative. I do need to move us on, and Lynn, can I come to you, because I do want to touch on some of the aspects, because Jennifer mentioned the Oireachtas Climate Committee. There are big concerns that this, you know, this the greening of CETA is greenwashing.
Yeah, like I agree that it should go before the Oireachtas, but for me, I think that the strategy should be to delay this and drag it out as long as possible, because we don't have the numbers. And even if you convinced the Greens to flip, you still don't have the numbers. You've got plenty of right-wing independents who'll step in. You have a split Labour Party who seem to be speaking out of both sides of their mouths on this. So my concern is this is so big that if this goes through, that's it. Do you know what I mean? There's no turning this boat around then. So, like, yes, we should be calling for a Oireachtas committee scrutiny, but the key priority at the moment should be it's not essential business. It shouldn't be coming on the Dáil schedule, mm-hmm. and just keep pushing back and try and delay as much as possible. Then if that strategy fails, then you go, right, risk analysis, demand that and get in and start talking and trying to delay it again. And then look at the Oireachtas committees and then finally look at the Dáil and Shannon debates. So for us, I think the strategy has to be delay, delay, delay. And like the messaging is going to be key as well, because like we've just had, well, I suppose it's a year now. Time is irrelevant in COVID. But like you did a general election where clearly the public were saying we want change. We want things done differently. And like, for example, with the housing situation and around the ICS, like, what was it, 8.5% or 8% was dropped off the IRA's share balance on the back of that election. And that was because they thought there might be a Sinn Féin housing minister who would bring in rent controls.
He just walked out by you.
So he's bringing me wine for my Friday evening. This is about getting that message out to the public. Do you want change? If you want change, then whatever you're doing, don't shackle yourselves with an ICS. Do you know what I mean? And that's where we need to put it up to Fianna Fáil, especially. Do you know what I mean? Whatever about Fine Gael, we know they're ideological about this. Richard Bruton actually wrote and asked for an ISDS to be included in TTIP. And then as Minister for the Environment, couldn't bring in a smoky coal ban, because even though without the investor courts, he was threatened with legal action. So I think that that's kind of the key, is the messaging to people, to the public. You wanted your radical government. Whatever you do, don't allow this to go in, because it's going to make it much, much harder. It's going to be hard enough anyway to deal with civil servants. It's going to be really hard if you have an investor court system as well, for any new government going in. So I think that has to be the message. And the other thing I would say is that all of the parties who are opposed to seat and all of the elected reps, we need to start putting it in that kind of messaging. It's about rent controls. It's about workers' rights. It's about public health. It's about home care packages. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just about climate. This is about every element of your life.
This is. I've said this before on the podcast, but I was there, and I heard a REIT, one of the top guys in one of the REITs, ask post election what that meant for their guaranteed returns that they'd built in into our up to 2040. And when you think of how we see what we have been told is the professionalization of our rental market and what that's done, where you see just plans up the road from me on the canal now, where a new entire built to rent model is going. Lovely site, great location, absolutely all for it, but people won't be able to buy or bid, never even bid, because it's going straight to built to rent. And if you take that away and then you give these people these huge funds, as Dave points out, these colossal funds that usually dwarf the Irish economy themselves with their resources, you're in a lot of trouble if you give them the actual ability to just drag it out for 10 years. Who wants to spend 10 years in arbitration? And that's what they will do. You know, there's great money to be made in that. I'm just going to go to our last panelist for this evening, and then we will take some questions. We will open it up. If anybody has any points, we'll absolutely go there. Martin might even help me out, because I'm already falling apart. But Alice Mary Higgins, you've listened to what the panelist said. Is there anything that you'd like to add and come in at the end for that, please?
So, yeah, no, just on the greenwashing, I think it's obvious, but perhaps to mention it, that Paris Agreement that is mentioned, there's no mention of Chapter 8. So if you do find yourself in a detailed fight with anybody, it's really around Chapter 8. That's the investment bit. There's nothing in the bit they reference to Paris that they added on. Doesn't mention Chapter 8, doesn't limit investors at all. Section 3.92 to 3.94, not to be technical, but for people who want to look it up, and you can look up, there's an EU chapter by chapter. It's really interesting. This is what we keep getting told is the right to regulate. That is a red herring. We know that we have the right to regulate. One of the only times that ISDS tried to take away the right to regulate is the Chevron case, the infamous case in Ecuador. But basically, what's really interesting, what those clauses that I know a lot of government TDs have sent come back with is, they say the mere fact that you regulate doesn't mean, the mere fact that you regulate isn't in itself a breach, but it's the fact that you regulate and that a company is able to say that they've been treated unfairly or had a disadvantage, or the IDA once came to them and said that they should invest in Ireland, or that they got a government contract, or all of the other things that can be construed as the state having said, we'd love you to do business here. All of those could be considered as bringing a company into being able to have a case around fair. And the thing is, they may well lose that case, but as was said before, they have huge pockets. I mean, they can take cases for 12 years. That's like two or three governments will be fighting the same case in terms of compensation. So you're tying the hands for that long. So they don't even have to win the case to have that deterrent effect, which is what they want. They want to create the chill effect. It's clearly the point. And just as well, you know, on the ICS and on the investor, I mean, I think the key argument is why we shouldn't be doing it now. And there's almost within that, there's, we aren't ready. We haven't scrutinized it. We haven't thought about the risks. It hasn't had democratic, you know, in the Senate in France, I think had 185. No, in the Netherlands had 185 rounds of questions on this already for the last 5 months, and they haven't ratified it. So we haven't, there's all of those arguments that it hasn't had the scrutiny and it hasn't had the consideration. There's also the arguments that there's prizes still to be won. So from a real politic position, if you're going into Mercosur potential negotiations, there are still changes that could be won in the ICS. That multilateral court that they talk about, it doesn't exist yet. It's over, in front of the UN, they're looking at that. So there's loads of battles still to be had. And most crucially of all, the Energy Charter Treaty is being renegotiated in March. France, just this week, the French ministers, it's actually since I was even speaking to you, it's evolved. We had the European Commission admitting that withdrawal was on the table. Now we have had France say they want the modalities of withdrawal looked at, and they've called on other European countries to support them in taking a really strong line in those energy charter negotiations. They're in March. So, you know, you would be crazy to throw away, you know, to literally be signing into something. It's just what you said, Tony. I mean, you would be wild to go into this when the US and Canada in their trade deal between themselves, you know, the UK and EU, the energy charter is leaving. You know, it would be wild to do it at this time. And just on one liner on that I've learned, which I found interesting, Russia and Italy have withdrawn from the energy charter. So when Italy withdrew, they're stuck with this 20-year zombie clause. And they're kind of, and you know, if that does, they're going to have to battle that. And maybe they're going to have to just, you know, drive through it. But Russia withdrew, I mean, not for any good principled reasons, but for weird control reasons. But when Russia withdrew, they had a 60-day, because Russia provisionally applied the energy charter since 1994 until 2009. They spent like 15 years in provisional application of the energy charter. And it's an example of, we can spend 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years in provisional application mode, improving the situation, improving the landscape, getting a pile of good legislation on the books. In a way, like Dave said, it's a lot easier to defend existing laws in these courts than it is to bring in new laws and defend those in terms of compensation claims. So there's just so many reasons.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's also worth remembering that our judiciary have a long history of dealing with these issues already. They're at a very high level of understanding, much more than in other countries. And to basically do away with that level of understanding and hand it to an outside court, I mean, that's really what you're doing. The way I look at it is, it's a loss of sovereignty. You're losing your ability to make these decisions. Fianna Fáil did that once before, and we can say it was by accident. We'll give them that. But the idea that they're going to do this voluntarily just to hand this over, it's a very good line of argument to use with Fianna Fáil. A very good line of argument to use.
Just an absolute one-liner on that, just to say, these arbitrators don't need to balance EU and domestic law, like environmental and contract law, in the same complex ways that our judges do. And I was actually looking at the text of CETA again today. It specifically says that these arbitrators may have regard to domestic law. They don't have to even consider domestic law at all. It's only an optional if they want to think about domestic law when
we may do this, we may do that, but we're all going to be run over by that truck in the end. Look, guys, it's been great engagement, but there are hands up, so we are going to take a few comments and questions. I'd ask people to hang on. I'll try to be patient, and we will get through too much. And I know it's Friday evening, so I appreciate you taking the time. Carly Bailey, I'm going to go to you first because you were first in.
Well, that's a first. Thanks, Mel. first of all, just to say well done getting this out there again, trying to get as much knowledge about this to everybody is so, so crucial. I suppose the question I have, I guess, is it's kind of easy to target the Green Party on this. And, you know, I think there's rightful criticism and all the rest of it. But the reality is that we've got two other parties in government who are pretty much, it seems to be bulldozing this through. We got a delay slightly last year. What, in your opinion, is the reason as to why they absolutely have to have this happen right now, other than is it putting political pressure on certain people? I'll just leave that with you. Thank you.
I think that's the multi-billion dollar question, that is.
Has anybody going to take a stab at that? Because, I can't come up with a real reason.
There's rumours that it's possibly that it's a payoff for the climate bill, but, you know, you don't know how true that is. That's one of the rumours that was out there, that you get your climate bill, but we get CETA. But I'm kind of the view that as well, it's the best boy in the class.
Jennifer, did you have a comment on that? Or?
I think they're trying for it now because they can. They have the numbers, and we don't know what's going to happen in a year's time or 2 years' time. And if there's a change of government, hopefully the dynamics will change, and it will be a more left government that replaces them. So, you know, this could be their only one.
I will say we spoke to Joe Pina in the Partido Socialista in Portugal yesterday, and they've made the same point off air that was done before they got into power, and they can't do anything about it now. And they're tied into it. Dave, I know you want to say something, so just give a brief comment, and then I'm going to open the next mic. Is that okay?
Yeah, perfect. No, it's just about that specific question. So there's two things at play there in my mind. One is that we're 4 years out from another election, so now is the time to do it if you're going to do it without having any accountability. Second thing is that we've just seen an election in the United States and the replacement of Trump, who was against all of these free trade agreements. So TTIP is back on the table as far as I'm concerned, and perhaps they're getting a soft version of TTIP in, so that they can say, look, we've got this in, there's no problems with it, let's bring in TTIP and just enable more investment or something along the lines of that.
Can I go now to Fabian? Sorry, you wanted to ask a question?
It's actually just a quick statement. So if you want to move on to somebody who's asking a question, it doesn't really have much of an answer, I suppose. I just want to say something briefly. Totally up to you.
We've unmuted you now, so let's get it.
I'm in the hot seat now. Oh yeah. So just to say, obviously, thank you so much for organising this call. I'm a colleague of Natasha's in Extinction Rebellion. Colleague doesn't sound right. Co-rebel maybe. And I just wanted to touch on what you said earlier about the energy of the kind of protests that we do. It's absolutely correct what you've said. You know, the pandemic has knock the wind out of the kind of street movement environmental protesting that's been happening over the last couple of years. And that's why I think we really wanted to row in behind this campaign, because it's kind of tentative at this stage, but it really does seem as though this is cutting through in a way that all of the stuff regarding the climate bill, regarding the program for government proposed last year, it just wasn't resonating with the general public. And I don't really blame them, because, you know, there was just everyone had so many things to deal with. So I suppose that's just to say is that we really recognize an energy here that wasn't in any of the previous campaigns we've done over the last year. And it's really driving things. We've got WhatsApp chats that are exploding. So just to say, thank you so much for keeping the energy going.
Okay. Barry O'Driscoll had his hand up as well. If there's anybody else, just pop them in. I see a few questions, but we're conscious of time, keeping people on a Friday night. Barry, did you have a comment?
Hi, thank you. Yeah, Barry here from Nocita Clare. Just considering the gravity of the situation, do you not all think that the media silence on all this is quite amazing? And why is that? Or do you think that's relevant?
I think there was a headline during the week that said the Irish Times was looking for some money from the government. So let's just extrapolate. If you're looking for money from the government, you don't tend to rock boats. That's okay. Just the way it goes.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if there's an understanding. I mean, I saw today a political correspondent commenting on a bill for the Land Development Agency, which was he positioned it in such a way as, and I thought, and this coming from my financial background, I looked at it and I went, how could you call that a good thing? That's a bad thing. And sometimes they just maybe don't understand it as much and can be quite busy. A lot of journalists have a lot on their plates and end up just giving out the information as it's presented to them, as opposed to actually being able to have the time to take it away, look it over. So if we're talking, and this has been presented as a done deal. It absolutely has been presented as a done deal. Anybody else got a comment?
I think Alice Mary wanted to come in there. Alice Mary.
No, well, there's just a few questions in the chat that I was going to answer if it was useful.
Sorry, just Lynn, did you want?
It was just, well, it's just one comment on the media and the messaging again. And I think someone had posted there about Leo talking about figures and increase in the economy or whatever. I think we need to be really careful not to fall into the trap. They want us to be talking about a trade deal.
Yeah.
And as we've said, the trade is done. So don't fall into that trap. This is about an investor court system. And that's what we need to keep talking. And don't refer to trade. Do you know what I mean? Because you're just playing into their hands. The trade is done, lads. You've won that. Now the battle is the investor courts. So that was all I just wanted to say.
Great. Sorry, Alice Mary, if you want to.
Yeah, no, just I was going to come in on that as well. And I think Jennifer, in her lengthy answer that she got on her last PQ, you know, they're talking about overall 0.2% potential advantage to the economy by 2030. Like, maybe it's pretty poor, leaving aside all of the costs and all of the environmental costs and everything. But all of that, it's exactly Lynn's point. That's not the point. That's not what's relevant, because the trade aspects are already done. And that's why all that PFG argument is a red herring too, because this is nothing to do with exports. It's nothing to do with trade. Literally to... Do we accept the jurisdiction of a new parallel legal system? The thing of it being a done deal, it's never a done deal. I was told in 2016, when I brought my very first PMB as a senator, which was on CETA, saying, you know, don't rush it. They're going to realise they have to treat the courts differently. 2017, they discovered, yes, they did need to treat the courts different, the investor courts. So we were told it was a done deal in 2016, and we're still here talking about it. So that's important. Somebody mentioned procurement. Yes, procurement's a huge issue because actually the EU were the actors in this. The EU pushed and forced Canada to open up procurement a lot. So there's a lot more exposure on, I think, down to local level procurement, not just kind of government macro level procurement on this. So I think it'd be a great piece of work if somebody wants to do it, is to dive into what it means for local councils and their procurement. So it's really exposed on that. And somebody mentioned Bitcoin. Because back to, you know, Dave in Australia, what's really interesting, some of the new cases that haven't happened yet, they're being talked about. Google and Facebook are talking about potentially using, like they did with Philip Morris, a tiny Singapore branch that they have to sue Australia if Australia brings in new rules that will affect Google and Facebook. So, you know, when we think about the tech are one of the big new actors that are going to be looking at this instrument. And just on the question of why now and why it's happening, I think it is directly because there's a set of bad deals waiting in the wings. There's this, there's Singapore, there's Vietnam. Set of bad models that what they call the new generation model. They're outdated. The new US deal doesn't give arbitration. The South African development community, they've got rid of arbitration. They know that they are in danger on the energy charter. I don't think there's any coincidence that it's happening at this time. I think it's happening because they realize that the tide is going out on the inclusion of these investor clauses, and they need to create momentum in the other direction.
There's a question there from Thomas Kramer, just in the Q&As. Thomas is asking about how do we get Fianna Fáil, or how do we put pressure on Fianna Fáil. Again, I think sovereignty is a good way to go back to them. You're looking at a court system that's outside of our own court system. I think that's a good angle to come at them, besides everything else that's out there. But when you're dealing with Fianna Fáil, that's kind of a scab that you can pick at a bit, you know. It just definitely is.
There's one other comment that says about free trade. One of my favorite things is a free trade agreement is the thing that helps billionaires make money and we all end up paying for it. There is that element, unfortunately, that look, free trade, I'm actually quite open borders, open for everything. Look, I've come through all that stuff. I helped ruin the economy as a banker, but nonetheless, we need to understand that we need to be protecting these things. There's a lot of other people asking about taking actions away from this. I would say what we need to be doing is we do need to look at that sort of the type of Twitter storm when we get confirmation that this is going to happen. We need to avail of Laura's fact sheet so we can have those conversations, and we need to be going through. Basically, the only way we can make our feet count is make the feet count digitally now. It is a digital march. This is why we wanted to do this. It's the start of a digital march. Lynn, did you have one more comment? And Jennifer, then, and then we'll...
Well, it's just like normally I'd be saying to people, talk to, you know, on the bar stool and have those chats and work and that. And I still think you need to do that, but you need to do it digitally and not again. I mean, that while we're in the social media bubble, we know there's a whole pile of people who aren't on social media and who aren't following that. And that's what I'm saying. It's important about the messaging. So whatever it is that resonates with the person, you know, whether it's your neighbor, your work colleague, your family member, do you mean if that's housing, if it's workers' rights, whatever it is. Do you mean start having those conversations and talking about it in those very simple terms? Is it right the corporations have access to a private court that nobody else has access to? Do you mean so? I wouldn't concede at all to just digital. You can do it on the phone or Zoom, but yeah, we need to be having conversations with the average Joe as well.
Yeah, sorry, Jennifer, you can.
I would just say to people, just annoy your councillors, annoy your TDs.
Amen.
With them, you know, have your voice heard, because. With the mother and baby home, so I think I received close to 5,000 emails. And it does make you sit up and you're thinking, geez, this is a really big issue, you know. And it doesn't have to be the template. You don't have to put a lot of information. Actually, in fact, I think if everyone just sent a one-liner in to say, I don't like CETA, I don't think, you know, we should be signing off on it, and you're my TD, I want you to listen to me. I think if Fianna Fáil TDs were getting, you know, bombarded with that, and parties across the spectrum, you know, I do really think it makes a difference, and just have your voice heard. And I also think, you know, there was one of the comments there about the media. If there is a big momentum, the media will feel that as well. I think at the moment, everything is COVID, you know, and no matter how big an issue, it's really difficult to keep traction on it in the media at the moment. You know, we'll have a crisis one day and then 24 hours, there's a different crisis completely, right? So it's really hard. So it's about just getting out there on Twitter, getting out on social media, talking to your friends and your family, and just having the discussion and making sure you're loud about it.
Yeah. They're not getting any feedback personally in constituency meetings in any other way. So it has to be digital, and you have to let them know how you feel. Discussing it and chatting among your friends doesn't let them know how you feel. Emails, phone calls, whatever you can do, just apply the pressure and keep applying it.
I spoke to two Fianna Fáil people today, and neither of them felt that this was an issue for them. And I said, "Well, it will be if I have my way." And they didn't. They weren't exactly thrilled with me. Dave, you had one more comment, because I know we need to be wrapping things up.
Yeah, no, I was just one of the things I was thinking about before I came on this is how to make this resonate with our members in retail. So there's 250,000 people working in retail at the moment. And so ordinary people understanding what the implications of this are. And I was thinking the temporary wage subsidy scheme and the employee wage subsidy scheme that have come in on the back of COVID, right? Where we have local retailers who are doing click and collect and trying to keep their businesses going and getting a state subsidy. Would Amazon in the future be able to come in and sue them for interfering with their profits because the state is now subsidizing wages for one group of workers and not theirs? So there's huge implications across a whole range of sectors that can start to resonate and get people thinking about how is this going to impact me in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, 10 or 10 years' time? So it's just one of those scenarios that people need to start putting out there.
Great point. And I think you're really, really... we got to bring it to the dinner table, and we got to focus on the people who are actually going to be impacted on that. And I think we will leave it at that. There's been some fantastic contributions. We will wrap this. Look, it was so funny today. We have the capacity for our webinars for the last year. And I said, oh, geez, we have to increase it and go out and buy more capacity because there was such an interest in it. So I'm so glad we did it. And I'm conscious that loads of people actually will be seeing us for the first time as the Tortoise Shack and all the rest of it. So hello and thank you. And I hope you'll check out the podcasts because we do a lot out there in the world. The Tortoise Shack is a small platform, but we try to keep the passing the mic. And I think I want to give thanks to the panel this evening. They've been terrific. Jennifer Whitmore, Natasha Arif, Alice Mary Higgins, Dave Gibney, Laura Cal, Lynn Boylan, and everybody who's contributed. I really appreciate it. Let's take this forward. It's when I said it's the start of a digital march, I really did hope that this would be something that we could drive on. I just believe that there is a chance to actually give them a bloody nose at the very least. And sometimes it's well worth throwing that haymaker. Thanks so much, folks.
Thank you.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.